The home of Notre Dame football. 96.1 WSBT, South Bend, the sports leader. This is the Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley.
Oh, yeah!
On 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader.
What is this?
We're talking Notre Dame football, the NFL, the Cubs, and more.
Oh, yeah, I like this idea.
The Leprechaun Lunch.
Pretty good. Pretty good.
With Sean Stiers.
All you do is dribble.
I have to dribble. If I give it to you, you just shoot.
And Evan Sharpley.
You're a chucker. You chuck.
If it's happening in sports.
Bumble!
We're talking about it.
Flag on the play.
Now your hosts. Woo! Sean Stiers and former Irish quarterback. Evan Sharpley.
Glad to have you with us. We come to you live from Five Star Dive Bar in downtown Elkhart. Our home away from home. How are we doing today, Evan Sharpley?
We're here, baby.
Getting ready for Father's Day weekend.
Oh, and man.
Your daughter Lucy was here. I saw her grandpa took her. And
yeah, there's a little confusion. You showed up, and she ran up, and right now how she calls grandpa, she says crappa.
Is that what it is?
Which is funny in itself.
It sounded like papa to me, but.
Well, that's what she calls my dad. My dad
okay.
is papa.
Your dad's papa. Okay.
But they're, yeah, you guys have similar builds, both wear glasses. And have a touch of gray.
Of course, the stunning gray hair as well. That's right. I don't know if it's just a touch of gray.
But look on her face was hilarious when that she realized that it wasn't crappa.
She was reaching her arms at me, and I'm like, Lucy, you've never given me such a greeting before when I've seen you. But it was funny. Yes, and then her face was like stunned that I was not crappa. So.
And now she's in the arcade here at Five Star Dive Bar.
Okay, so that's what she's doing.
She's
occupying herself with that. All right.
Probably playing some skee ball.
All right, good stuff. Well, of course, don't forget about the smoked wings special at Five Star Dive Bar. You can get a pound of smoked wings for just $7. You can get 2 pounds for $12. They are freshly smoking those as we speak, so they'll be ready for you. Of course, Five Star is open for lunch every weekday at 11 a.m. Great burgers, great sandwiches, wraps.
That's chicken, bacon, ranch wrap with fries today.
Chicken, bacon, ranch wrap.
Which I had.
All right. Almost a little bit of a tongue twister, but
yeah.
Chicken bacon ranch wrap with fries, $8, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So that is the lunch special.
And I had some chili, too, which was very good.
Well, they do. They have good soups, good salads, a little bit of everything here at Five Star Dive Bar in downtown Elkhart. So we've got a lot to get to today. And the last couple weeks, we've talked a little bit about the state of the Notre Dame baseball program. Mm-hmm. And then, so, of course, we're here every Friday from noon until 1. And it was the next morning, just last Saturday, the day after we talked a little bit about the program. Where is it? Kind of where can it go? The things working for it and against it. It was the next morning Notre Dame announced that after 9 seasons as head coach at Notre Dame, Mickey Aoki would not come back for a 10th season. He had 224 wins, 223 losses, one tie in his 9 years at Notre Dame. Of course, they've only been in the ACC since 2014. They were 96-129 in the ACC, 3 winning seasons in his 9 years. He does have the only NCAA tournament appearances in the 13 seasons since Paul Maneri has been at LSU. Dave Schrag, a guy who was your head coach along with Paul Maneri, could not get back to the NCAA tournament, and that was in the Big East, let alone the ACC. So his best season, Mickey Aoki, was in 2015 when he led the Irish to a 37-23 record, 17-13 overall in the ACC. Their only winning record in ACC play in his time at Notre Dame, 12 games below 500 in the ACC over the last 3 seasons. So I guess your initial thoughts on the decision to go another direction by Notre Dame.
I think that, we've talked quite a bit about this, and I don't know if there was pressure mounting behind the scenes over the last couple of years, but to be honest with you, I think I was surprised that he was retained as the coach
last year,
even 3 years ago.
Yeah.
you know, you're 9 years in. You've only had one, three winning seasons in 9 years. You did make it to a tournament. If you look at the numbers, which maybe don't do it justice, there didn't seem to be the carryover of the amount of talent that was leaving Notre Dame and having success in minor league baseball and then pro baseball at the major league level, and those not turning into wins in college. So certainly, when the time comes, I think it, that discussion finally happened after this last season, and saying maybe we just need to look at creating some new perspective, a fresh start, hit the reset button, and then move forward.
Yeah, I mean, there are some good things that Mick Aoki has done. Obviously, the results on the field didn't necessarily show it. The ACC does play a part in that, being a private school, and the ACC plays a part in it. There's some other factors, and we'll get to here in a minute. We talked about the fact that there have been – he'd at least tried to use analytics a little bit more these last few years. That is still really, in college baseball, in its infancy, the analytics thing. Even though North Carolina is a school that's been out front in that, they've been doing it for a few years. It's still – just starting to take hold. I think you've probably got a lot more old school guys in college who have done things the same way for a long time. Maybe that's catching up. I will say this. We should, I guess, always set it up with, because I think people know you more as a Notre Dame football player. Just reiterate that you played for Pulmonary as a baseball player at Notre Dame. Was he the first one who started recruiting you at Notre Dame?
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't on anybody's radar, either sport. Until I went to a Notre Dame baseball camp. It was a one-day baseball camp, and my dad was actually kind of the one that pushed me to go do it. I didn't really want to go. He's like, "Why? I mean, let's just go and hit and field and throw. And if it's something that you don't really like moving forward, then we won't continue to pursue it." But I went, and I really hit it off with the whole staff, and they were very excited about the way I was swinging the bat left-handed, and being a football player too. That was something that Paul recruited, was guys that were multi-sport athletes, whether they were going to play a second sport in college or not, but guys that had multiple sport experience he really liked, and in leadership roles too. So if it hadn't been for Paul, I probably wouldn't have ended up at Notre Dame. Then that opened the door to the football side of things, and I remember a story of Paul is I went to a Notre Dame football camp. And he came from the baseball field to come over and watch me throw during a summer football camp. And Bill Dietrich, who was the offensive coordinator, had this really weird – it was some type of quarterback challenge that he had. So we did a number of different tasks. One was an accuracy thing. And there was actually an arm strength one where we got to just toe the line and go up and throw it as far as we could. And I go up there and I – threw it a fairly good distance, and I remember turning around and Paul came up to me and gave me a high five.
Really?
Yeah. He was like, that was really good.
Great job, Evan.
That was really good. So, but then of course, the football staff got fired about a month or two prior to me actually signing, and I remember having a couple of conversations with Paul, and his talk to me was, the full list of things on why you really fell in love with and wanted to go to Notre Dame are still there. The coaching staff is gone, and that will play obviously play a role in this decision. But ultimately, he just kind of reiterated this being the reasons why I had initially wanted to go to Notre Dame. Those ones didn't change. So I would say he played a really large role, in that. That was my story in getting to Notre Dame, and then Paul left after my freshman year, so I was then a year in, and there were no coaches on either staff that I had been part
true.
Of the recruiting class, which was a little bit of a culture shock. So,
right.
But to enter into that last year with Paul, I was able to get a taste of what the expectations were and what the baseball players that came before me experienced during his tenure. And the expectation was you're going to win the league, you're going to win the tournament, the league tournament, you're going to probably win 40 games, and you're going to get a ring. that was the expectation. And I showed up and we did that my freshman year. I was like, oh. I was like, this is pretty cool. Like, I'm already looking.
We did everything you said we were going to do.
I'm looking 4 years down the road. I'm like, okay, you know, that's 160 wins, give or take, right?
Yeah.
Okay. That's going to be four more rings if I stay for 4 years. And, you know, the ability to maybe make a run in the postseason and play in the College World Series. So I think, you know, following that year, it was very exciting. And then I distinctly remember the conversation that I had with Paul. And part of it was, too, I was dating his daughter, Sammy, at the time. So
right.
I was spending a little more time, you know, at his house. And but, you know, talking when the news kind of happened where he was not going to continue as the Notre Dame baseball coach. And it was a very hard discussion. You know, part of it with the relationship, you know, being kind of part of the family at that time, but really also being part of that baseball family where it was, he did a kind of prod me to end up at Notre Dame.
Yeah.
And I remember looking at him, I was like, I can't, like, how do I fault you for this opportunity? You know, like, and he was more concerned about how I felt, you know, which said a lot about him.
I mean, he was like that with a lot of people. It's like, you don't hate me now, do you?
Well, and that was it, is he didn't want to upset anybody. But, you know, it was, again, you're how do you – I mean, of course, there are some things I think happened behind the scenes, too.
Right.
That led to that.
But some of that probably, depending on which behind-the-scene thing, also still – There's some things that carry over today,
sure,
in terms of things,
sure,
that need to be different at Notre Dame.
Oh, I agree 100%. So, you know, then moving forward, you know, since then, it's kind of been the opposite of what those expectations were and then the type of success that there was on the field. And I think now it's kind of become, you know, it isn't business as usual. It isn't what those expectations were when you walked in the door. And, you know, for the last 10 years, you know, each new group of players that come in, they didn't, or really probably didn't know that's how
farther removed from the standard.
They didn't know. They're like, oh, that's what this program was.
Yeah.
They were really the jewel of the North as far as college baseball was concerned.
If you're
going to say, because for the longest time, you know, there were, it is hard to compete and it is out there. But you're seeing more teams in the North now, or cold weather schools that are having success. So I don't think that's necessarily an excuse anymore. But for the longest time, it was.
Right.
And really, Notre Dame was the only school, Northern school, that was competing with other Southern schools and having, you know, large amounts of success. So, you know, now you're getting into the time where, you know, switching from the Big East to the ACC, that's on the table. That's part of the discussion. But at the same time, you are seeing other schools that are having success that are set up in a similar vein, that value academics, that value, you know, extracurriculars as far as what they're doing and giving back to the community.
Right.
And right now, Notre Dame, I think, is getting out-recruited and out-developed as far as what they're, you know, they're doing on the field.
Yeah, and so after Paul, of course, went to LSU, Dave Schrag was the head coach, and you played under him for a while. And we don't have to rehash all of that. I mean, obviously, there was a big difference
in
who they were.
And Paul, you know, had a relationship with Dave, and I think gave kind of the blessing there. But, you know, it was a...
We should say, because... You know, the Pat Casey thing at Oregon State. Pat Casey was just coming off his first national championship there, and there was some flirtation, mm-hmm, there. And there were some who would say that Pat Casey used Notre Dame to get a big fat pay raise. If you talk to Notre Dame people, they thought that it was a tough decision for him. Where the truth lies, I'm not sure. He does have a special needs son, and that was one of the things that he talked about after staying there, that he was really entrenched in the community, had a lot of good community support there in Corvallis and at Oregon State. Pat Casey, the devout Catholic, you know, so there was at least some conversation there. But to go, obviously, from Pat Casey, who had just won a national championship, seriously considering Notre Dame, to Dave Schrag, there's a big difference in what you're getting as a coach.
Yeah, I mean, no doubt. And, you know, Dave had done a nice job of developing the program at Evansville.
In some small schools,
some smaller schools.
Northern
but,
Illinois.
You know, it's a little bit of a different, you know, a small fish then coming into a big ocean.
Well, purely from a baseball, and again, there's some things with his wife passed away before he ever coached a game at Notre Dame, and you talk to people you talk to people who know him, they tell you that he was a completely different person before and after, and so maybe from the baseball side, it's hard to tell because we never really get to see a lot of that. And again, for people who don't know, I was the radio announcer for Paul Mainieri's last 6 years, and then Dave Schrag's first 2 years. And then after the radio rights shakeup here in town, Chuck Freebie was doing the radio for 10 or 11 years. And I would, at the start of the season, when they had conflicts, I would fill in on some road trips and stuff like that. So I was fortunate, you know, to still kind of have that connection and get to know Mick Aoki and kind of what he was about, too. So I got the perspective of all three of those staffs. But I think one of the biggest things, the personality difference between Mainieri and just his ability to outreach and connect with people and things like that, I think that was a big difference, and we've talked about it before. It was hard for guys like you who are on the team to make that adjustment when you go from one extreme to another.
Yeah, I mean, it was totally different. And I mean, I'll be honest with you. You know, my experience with Coach Schrag was not a positive one by any means. So, you know, when we're having these types of conversations, I try to be as unbiased as possible and look at it more from now as an alum, you know, what can be done to continue to build this program. And really, same when Coach Aoki came in. My brother was on the team at the time, and
right.
He had a kind of a little bit of an issue as far as the scholarship or the money side of things was concerned, and he ended up leaving Notre Dame. So, you know, and those things go on. I don't think there's necessarily any hard feelings on either side of it. But there was, the temperature, the culture was very, very different between, Mainieri to Schrag and Aoki as well. And to kind of put it in perspective, and this isn't to necessarily throw anybody under the bus, but I think it's a good example on, you know, attention to detail with one, you know, program or regime versus the other.
Yeah.
Is there was a situation where there was a player that was getting recruited. This would have been post Mainieri, and there were two baseball players in the United States with the same name. One was a higher ranked recruit, and one was not even ranked. And as you can imagine now, the second player, who was not ranked, ended up getting a scholarship offer and came and played at Notre Dame. And bless this kid's heart, right? He shows up to the first day of practice and literally could not make contact with a ball in the batting cage. And we're just kind of all looking around like, what's going on? And so long story short,
was he recruited by the pitching coach?
Yes.
Yeah.
Long story short,
heard this story before.
This position player, you know, ends up, getting a scholarship. Uh-huh. And I think how it kind of happened as we transitioned to the following year was he was more of a manager's role.
Yeah. Yeah. So that tells you a big difference there. Okay. So the success aside, there's been an evolution, not just in wins and losses on the field for Notre Dame baseball, but obviously going from the Big East, and specifically the old Big East. And when I say old Big East, that is pre-Louisville and South Florida coming aboard, and then the transition to the ACC. I want to ask you about facilities, because had some conversations over the weekend with some people who have both coached and played at Notre Dame in the past, obviously specific to baseball, and a lot of different things came up. And facilities is one thing. Facilities as well as salaries are two things that came up. So what I want to ask you, when you were being recruited, well, even before, after you got here, okay, would you agree that in the old Big East, Notre Dame baseball had the best facility in the Big East Conference?
I would think that's fair to say. I mean, you know, we and most of the places that we traveled to, I don't think had been updated, you know, maybe in 10 years.
Yeah.
Notre Dame had recently gone through a remodel. The Goog had just been built for the football and baseball program, so brand new weight room. Granted, we did have to walk from the baseball facility to get there, right? But overall, you know, we had an indoor facility, with cages and a nice field. So I think, you know, in comparison to what most other schools look like, I think people appreciate, you know, having a home and away locker room. That was nice. You know, there were some places we went, if I remember correctly, when we played at Pitt, you know, it looked like it was a community field that we were playing on.
They had literally taken a couple rows of old seats out of the basketball arena, and they plopped them down behind the backstop, and that was the seating for a Pitt baseball game. There was no press box. You sat either – sometimes you sat – because of where the electric was, you sat right beside the dugout at a card table and did.
Correct me if I'm wrong. If I remember correctly, too, the dugouts like weren't. It wasn't like an actual dugout underneath. It was kind of like your summer baseball or softball league.
Yeah.
Just chain link fence.
Yeah.
So
exactly.
You could turn around and talk to whoever's behind the dugout.
But I mean, Rutgers.
Yeah.
There was no press box at Rutgers. No press box at Seton Hall. UConn had a press box, but it was like a high school press box that sat to the third base side of home plate.
UConn might have been one of the programs that invested a little bit of money. They had an indoor facility with a digital pitching machine where you could have, you know, you could pick Randy Johnson and he'd show up and they'd shoot the ball out of his arm slot.
Oh, really? Okay.
But they were one of the few that you could tell, I think, that were willing to invest some money in, you know, some of the facilities.
And they've had some success under Jim Penders.
They did, especially
George,
you know,
Springer.
Yep, and I mean their pitching staff year in and year out was really good too. Mm-hmm. It would have been Mike Olt, would have been the third baseman too. I played against
Mike Olt.
He ended up with the Red Sox for a little bit.
I think Matt Barnes was there.
Matt Barnes was another one too. So, you know, I think you could tell that there was some value placed on the player development and their experience there.
St. John's at least had a press box in a decent grandstand, but again, it was far from a fancy facility, kind of the same as West Virginia. So there was not a whole lot there. Villanova played in two different parks.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a press box, but again, it was in a city park. Georgetown played well off campus. Their facility wasn't bad, but it was more, I think it was, they called it the Big Train for Walter Johnson. It was like a summer baseball league.
That was my favorite play. I had four home runs in two games there.
That's right. You love that Georgetown pitching,
love
didn't you?
Love that place. They also only had two scholarship players, two scholarships to give out to the whole team. But
that's right. So then Louisville comes along, though, and they've got a really nice facility.
Totally next level.
Yeah. And then they went to the top of the heap in the Big East. South Florida, it took them a couple years. I don't think they built the new stadium when you were still playing, did they?
No, I don't think so. I think that it was coming.
Yeah.
And another program, too, Cincinnati redid their stadium,
I forgot about
too.
Cincinnati. Yeah. That's right. Marge Schott Stadium.
Yeah, it was really nice. You know, it kind of built, I think, underneath. You know, you've got the road, and then it's a lower level down. But a really cool setup there. But I don't think that was a later addition on to, you know, when I was still there. I don't think early in my career. So I think it's still fairly recent, I guess, within the last 10 years that they would have a new stadium. Yeah.
Yeah, but, I mean, it's probably minor league quality. I mean, I know there's elevators inside and just the layout of the press box and the whole thing. So they've got artificial turf and I mean, they've had a couple guys who are in the big leagues themselves. So when you look at this facilities things, now where Notre Dame is going into the ACC, they essentially went from one of the best facilities in the Big East to the lower third of the conference in the ACC in facilities. So when you look at that, this is something that I heard from when I talked to people who have been here, that facilities are an issue. And I even heard from a couple of different people that before Mick Aoki was hired, there was a specific candidate who hadn't quite yet become the hot guy, but he was on the rise. He was talking about coming here. A couple of the big things that came up were facility upgrades, both indoor and the stadium, pay for coaches, both head coaches and assistants. He ended up not coming to Notre Dame, and he has since gone to the College World Series with a different team and is now coaching in the SEC as well. So it seems like, you know, again, because it's like there's a facility. It's not the best facility, but it's a pretty good facility. It's 25 years old now. There's an indoor facility. They've done some upgrades and all these things, but it sounds like the facilities is still an issue, especially, again, because you're competing against ACC schools now. So what do you think of that?
I mean, it's an arms race. Same with, you know, within college football. Who's got the newest, brightest, shiniest toys? You have to invest into these programs. You know, now with the surge in technology and how that's used.
They do have some of that. They have some of those cameras around the field and stuff.
You know, to build into, you know, the TrackMan technology for spin rate for your pitchers and velocity and movement and tracking exit velocity and attack angles and time to contact and all that. That's part of the investment, too. But, you know, also making it a one-stop shop where the weight room is in the indoor facility. You know,
and that's what I was going to ask you, because you mentioned the Goog, and it's a nice facility and everything.
Which they just redid for the football program recently within the last month.
And it's nice that all the other sports have access to that. But, again, when you're talking about the top programs in the ACC and the SEC, all that stuff is built into their stadium. It's all right there.
Yeah, and it's not like you need you're talking about a team of 30 guys, and usually workouts are probably going to be split up by pitchers and position players anyways. And you might not have full team workouts all the time where, you know, whether it's because of class schedule or a guy's got a bullpen at a certain time. And the amount of equipment that you really need. I mean, I own a smaller box type of gym setup. There's a lot you can do in a small space with the right type of equipment that focuses on building explosive athletes. It's not like these guys need a lot of different types of things to train with. But I think investing into that side of things is important. You know, being able to create an experience that's easily marketable, especially when now you're seeing other teams in this area, in the north. You know, Michigan's having a lot of success right now in the postseason, but even teams like Indiana and Northwestern and
Purdue.
Ohio State and Purdue, you know, spending money to make it attractive.
Well,
to
and
come
that's
here.
That's the thing, because we talked about this last week about the fact that the Big Ten 10 years ago, prior to Mick Aoki being hired, even the Big Ten was still a one bid NCAA league. If you won the conference tournament, you were going to get in. Maybe if you won the regular season and you didn't win the tournament, you had an outside chance to get in. They've got five in this year. Now, they're not going to get five in every year, but they have become a multi bid league. And it's interesting because one of the other things that I did after working for Notre Dame Radio, got to cover college baseball on a more national perspective with collegebaseball360.com, and so got kind of a more of a maybe a 360 view of the whole thing, you know, not just from inside Notre Dame, but got to see a lot more things about how other people are doing it. And I actually did a piece with Mick Aoki because there was that proposal several years back that the Big Ten wanted to have regular season games in the fall when the weather was better and do those kind of things, which, I mean, if you're in the north, yeah, it makes a lot of sense. But Aoki was against that. And one of the things that he said and one of the things that I had said for a long time was, you know, look, you're the Big Ten. You get BCS money because it was still the BCS back then. You have a lot of money coming into your school that you get from different TV rights, from football, from basketball, and the whole thing. Put more money into your programs. Well, lo and behold, they have, because what you're talking about, Purdue has a new stadium, Minnesota has a new stadium, IU has a new stadium, and most of the other ones, Ohio State, Michigan State, they've upgraded their stadiums
Iowa
as well.
Iowa has all of the technology built into
exactly.
there. They take BP, and every swing they know what swing speed and what the exit velocity is that's coming off the bat. So, yeah, these teams are putting money into what, you know, into these programs.
And I've got to think that – and I have not researched like every coach's salary, but so I don't know how big a part that plays into it. But I have to think that the fact when you're out there trying to get kids, that the fact that you have invested in your stadium, in the place that these kids are going to be playing every day, that has to matter quite a bit. So I just wanted to ask you, and we'll take our first break here in just a minute. If you looked at Frank Heck Stadium right now and you were going to do two things, what would you do to upgrade the stadium?
The technology side for me is a little more appealing. That's probably not like maybe the popular answer as far as
but they do
experience.
They do. I know they do have some of that there. They've got you know, like the cameras that are built in and all that kind
of
stuff.
I've always said, and you know, I was on some of my recruiting visits, I went and, you know, played or visited schools you know, within the South, and LSU being one of them at Alex Box Stadium. But how can you make the environment more appealing to the general fan base and especially the students too? And for years I've been calling for a patio you know, behind right field or left field that's just for the students or, you know, just for, you know, the younger crowd to come there and let loose.
Hang out and do their thing. They do that stuff at Mississippi State, I know.
Yeah, so I think that for me, if we had just the design of things, I would look at doing something like that. And then also, why not? The power alleys are to die. Bring them in a little bit. Let's see a few more home runs.
You don't want it to be pitcher friendly?
No, I mean, come on. Let's get a couple more bombs. But, you know, for me, it's all about the experience of it, I think, for the fan base. And I thought I've said this for a long time, is how can you upgrade to get more students there? Because really, you know, and you play around with difficult weather sometimes in the spring too, but
yeah.
How could you still get, you know, the general population of the student body out there to watch more games? I think would help sell more kids on, okay, I show up for a recruiting visit to watch them play a baseball game in the spring, and you're looking around and there's some people bundled up, but there's also nobody there. Like, well, let's fill the stands even if they are bundled up, and
right.
Let's create a good experience.
Well, and I mean, I look at Four Winds Field, they've got kind of the awning,
yeah,
that comes out, a little bit of cover. Replace the – I've never liked the bleachers. I know it's been talked about before over there. Get rid of all the bleachers. Replace them with real stadium seatback seats so it's more comfortable and enjoyable. And at the same time, if you're going to put some of that awning up, put some heaters in there because it is not warm in South Bend in March and April.
Well,
you know?
Talked about this before, that it was supposed to be a dome, right, the Shark Dome.
That's right. That hasn't happened yet.
The Shark Pollock Dome.
There you go. I like that. Get AJ and Jeff Samardzija involved. And I would also modernize the scoreboard because, again, like even Illinois, that doesn't have the biggest, best facility. They've got a solid facility, but they've got a really nice score. And most of these places do now, too. They've got the bigger,
yeah,
the actual video boards and stuff. And I realize that costs money and it costs fundraising. But, again, if coaches are asking about facility upgrades before they ever come in the door and you're unwilling, I mean,
I'm sure someone could write a check for this.
Someone could.
Just put their name on it.
That's a matter of who it is, I guess. Let's take a timeout. When we come back, we'll continue the conversation. We've got a list of both possible candidates as well as we're going to go back because anytime this comes up, you hear about some of the former assistants who have been here at Notre Dame. Some of them have had some success as head coaches themselves and as assistants. So we'll go through the list of guys who have been assistants here. See maybe who makes sense, and just kind of, again, you've got a lot of firsthand experience with most of them. So do I. So we'll kind of go through that list, former assistants at Notre Dame, and discuss them as well. So we'll do that when we take a timeout. From Five Star Dive Bar, downtown Elkhart, Sean and Sharpley, Leprechaun Lunch, 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. John and Sharpley, Leprechaun Lunch, Five Star Dive Bar in downtown Elkhart. Glad to have you with us as always. What's that lunch special we've got going on again today, Evan?
A bacon chicken wrap with some ranch.
Bacon chicken ranch wrap with fries for $8. And we've got Whiskey Highway on the stage tonight.
That's right.
At 10 o'clock. And then tomorrow.
And there's an electronic cello that's going to be out on the patio stage tonight at 7
p.m. Is that something like the jazz flute or?
Jazz flute, maybe. And then Ultra Fab is here tomorrow night.
Play the jazz flute for us.
I'm sure we could find one of those to go with the electronic cello.
Absolutely right. All right, so good stuff. And Jace was telling me they had a band in here from Nashville last night.
They
left one of their guitars or something on stage.
I think they thought we were going to play.
I guess so. Do you play at all? Do you play any instruments?
No. I played the piano when I was younger, but then that kind of interfered with how much time I was able to spend hitting.
You didn't stay completely Renaissance, huh?
No, my brother actually, I can still read music. I'm not real great at playing it.
I've always liked music. I tried to play trumpet and drum, but I found out I have no rhythm and no musical
I got
talent
pretty
at
good
all.
At Guitar Hero for a while. Does that count?
Yeah, there you go. I mean, it might as well. You could probably make a living doing that. These days,
so good.
So we've been talking about the Notre Dame baseball position. Came open last Saturday when Notre Dame made the announcement that Mick Aoki would not be back at Notre Dame for a 10th season. Notre Dame has been to the NCAA tournament just one time in the last 13 years, after going 9 times in Paul Menard's 12 years and 4 times in 7 years under Pat Murphy before that as well. So the two most successful guys, of course, Venneri is at LSU. Pat Murphy is the bench coach in Milwaukee for Craig Counsell, who played for him here at Notre Dame. And they've been pretty successful. Mm-hmm. And Murphy was pretty successful at Arizona State as well. His family has made two of the bigger additions to Notre Dame's Frank Eck Stadium with both the clubhouse area and the player area, which both look great. Really nice. Yeah. But, you know, we were talking about the facilities. I think that a facelift on the outside is in order at this point where it is, because if you just do a Google search of any of the facilities in the ACC, the teams you're competing against, it's not that it is a bad facility, but it is just, when you look at it, it's got to be lower third in the ACC conference right now when you stack it up against these other programs.
Yeah, it's time. I mean, and what better time than right now when you are kind of going through the process of a changing of the guard as far as who's going to be leading the program. So I would think that, you know, whoever they end up hiring, that'll be part of the discussion on, okay, what is our, you know, what is our 5-year plan on what this program, what we want to do with it? And starting to put some money into the facilities, put some money into the coaching staff too, the technology piece, whether it's adding a weight room to the indoor hitting facility. I don't know. I just think that if the athletic department wants this program to take a step forward, those have all got to be pieces that are on the table.
Yeah, I mean, hiring a new head coach is obviously part of it, and that's part of the mm-hmm. step, but the there has to be a commitment shown. And I think, again, just talking to people, looking at Kendall Rogers, he tweeted over the weekend because somebody asked him about, well, he tweeted the news of Aoki not coming back, and then somebody said, well, if you're Notre Dame, do you go get the Indiana staff? And Kendall Rogers' response was,
why would you leave?
Yeah, why would you leave a place like Indiana that's committed to baseball for a place that – again, these are Kendall Rogers' words that has shown that it's not committed to baseball.
This job is going to be a tough sell right now.
Yeah,
it's not elite. It's not 40 wins a year in conference championships. It's at a different stage right now than it was 15 years ago.
And that, to me, it's not just you're a northern school in the ACC. It's you are a private school in the ACC, and we've talked about the financial side before, about how places like Vanderbilt, Stanford, Rice, essentially 99% of the private schools that have had any success in college baseball have a different financial aid setup that are helping because of the fact that you have 11.7 scholarships per college baseball team. And so those things,
$70,000 for tuition. Yeah,
exactly. Exactly. And then Mike Rooney on the ESPN broadcast at Super Regionals last week, Mike Rooney, who again played for Pat Murphy, coach for Pat Murphy as well. He went with him to Arizona State. He made the comment that essentially finances should not be a reason why you don't get in mm-hmm. to Vanderbilt. And that's across the board. It's not just for baseball, but baseball definitely benefits from those at those schools. And so that's kind of Notre Dame at a crossroads right now. It's like, are you just going to say that the ACC is the problem, or are you going to decide, hey, we're going to commit to this and see if we can really compete in the ACC? I think that's part of the question right now when you're talking to new coaching candidates.
Yeah, I mean, you have to invest if you want to expect to get a return on it.
Right.
Right?
Spend money to make money.
Yeah.
I think that's definitely a part of it. So as we kind of continue this conversation, one of the questions now.
So we just said it's going to be a tough sell. Who's going to come?
Well, I mean, it is. It is still a tough sell. I mean, I got a question this week from someone I know when we kind of were talking about just what we were talking about there, but with the academics and commitment and the whole thing, and the response was, well, what about Duke? If they can do it, shouldn't Notre Dame be able to do it? And I agree. I mean, part of the thing with Duke, they hired Chris Pollard a few years ago, and they've had unprecedented success. I think it's in the 5 years that Pollard has been there. They came from Appalachian State. He came from Appalachian State, brought his staff. So he already had a good recruiting base in that area. He's proven to be a good head coach. I don't think that Duke is necessarily any more committed with facilities and all those other things than Notre Dame is, but I would fully expect that a guy like Pollard is probably going to be moving on to a bigger program here pretty soon. So they kind of caught lightning in a bottle. That doesn't mean Notre Dame can't with whoever they hire, but at the same time, you got to hire the right guy. And I mean, that's a big question. Who are you going to hire now?
So because who's Notre Dame going to hire, Sean?
Well, I wish I knew, but I mean,
we don't know yet.
Do you want to go through these former Notre Dame assistants? You want to go through the
sure,
list of
yeah.
them here?
Let's talk through a few of them.
Okay, so I went all the way back, and if I left any guys out, you can throw them out. Brian O'Connor, obviously, is a guy whose name comes up. I mean, he's at Virginia. And again, you know, people bring him up, but he's won 700 games in 16 years and a national championship at Virginia. They were and also ran in the ACC before he got there. And he's been to the College World Series four times. He's been to the NCAA tournament all but the last 2 years. You're not going to get Brian O'Connor to come back, even though one of his best friends is John Gumpf, who we talked about last week, the volunteer assistant on that staff, who's the head coach at St. Joseph High School here in town, or in South Bend anyway, and his son Brady is committed. But the two hot commodities forever have been O'Connor's assistants, Kevin McMullen and Carl Kuhn. McMullen is the main recruiter. Kuhn is the pitching coach. They've both done a phenomenal job, but they've been there all 16 years, which is amazing to me.
It is.
And
you would think by now if they wanted
they've
to
had
pursue,
a lot of offers. Yeah, that's right.
Left.
Could this be the time to pry him away, though, because Virginia's actually missed the tournament the last couple of years? I don't know exactly what that means, but
I don't know.
They're two guys who, like, when any coaching search opens, that I think you have to reach out to and gauge their interest because, again, they've been there. That staff has been together, O'Connor, McMullen, Kuhn, all 16 years at Virginia, and they have done a phenomenal job. Kuhn is a guy who can be pretty intense. And we talked with one of the South Bend Cubs pitchers who, and his name escapes me right now. We had him on Sports Beat a few weeks ago, and he said as much that he's the kind of guy who, you know, can be pretty intense, but at the same time, he knows when to pat you on the back. Sounds like, you know, kind of pulmonary right there a little bit. Eddie Smith is a guy you played with who is also on that staff, and Eddie was the volunteer assistant at Virginia.
He basically got into coaching as soon as baseball ended for him at Notre Dame.
Yeah, and I mean, he was on that staff for a long time. And
another thing I must say, Paul loved Eddie.
Hard worker?
Loved Eddie. Eddie and I, we didn't have enough lockers. Okay, so my freshman year, him and I had to split. We had to share a locker. So he had the locker all to himself during the fall when I'm playing football, and I show up in the spring, and there we are. We both had to have all of our stuff and change and share one locker.
Yep. And so Eddie was a guy who played a little junior college baseball before coming to Notre Dame, walked on at Notre Dame, made the team, shared a locker with Evan Sharpley. So he played for Paul Maneri, and then he goes and he coaches for several years, part of those College World Series staffs at Virginia. He left there, went to Santa Clara for a year, came back to Notre Dame on Mick Aoki's staff as a volunteer assistant for a year. Then he goes back out to the Seattle area.
Which is where he's from.
Right, exactly. He coached
a junior head coach there.
Yeah, coached out there, and they had great success at Lower Columbia College, and he's been at Tulane for the last couple years now. So there's a guy that's got both the success of Brian O'Connor and Paul Maneri both
and
in
Paul,
his background.
Paul was the one who linked that up.
Yeah, exactly.
To go there and coach. And,
You got to do the job to stay on the staff too.
Right. Exactly. But I think he's done a nice job of building his resume and putting himself into a position where he has a lot of value. I know he really likes Tulane, that staff there right now.
Mm-hmm. I think they were linked to Washington State, but I don't think that ended up happening.
I think that's kind of quieted down a little bit. The head coach, Jewett, he has ties there.
Right.
But I think they won six games last year. So it was kind of are we going to go try to build a program from nothing? Literally nothing.
Exactly.
Versus Tulane, where there's a lot of stability there. And he's actually recruiting within the class. Cam Sinski, who's a kid I train at Sharpley Training.
Oh, really?
A Penn player, is a commit to Tulane.
Okay.
And it was kind of a small world once, you know, there was some interest there. Started talking to Eddie again. So it's been, you know, it's kind of been good to touch base with him. So that one's interesting. I mean, he's a huge, he was a huge Notre Dame fan, right, before he even came. But, you know, he's got such a great thing going at Tulane. I don't know.
I don't either, but I would say don't overlook that, because that's essentially how Pat Murphy got to Notre Dame. He was coaching at a D3 school, Case Western, and loved Notre Dame, had that in his background, and really worked that angle, and that's how he got in the door. And there was some of that with Paul Menier. There was nothing in either Pat Murphy or Paul Menier's resumes that screamed, this is the guy for Notre Dame, other than their passion for Notre Dame when they got here, because neither one of them had necessarily lit the world on fire at the places they were. Menier was at Air Force. So I would say don't overlook that at all. Really good baseball. Dark horse, but a guy that I think is going to be a really good head coach at some point, whether it happens here or not. Okay, so then the two guys who were here with Paul Menier and went to LSU were Terry Rooney and Cliff Godwin.
Love them both.
Cliff ain't leaving.
He ain't leaving East Carolina.
Stars, I'm staying here. You talked last week about Cliff Godwin and his private jet, his ability to get on a private jet and go recruit. He's been at LSU. He went with Terry Rooney to Central Florida when Rooney became the head coach there, was there for a couple years. Then Ole Miss, helped Ole Miss break a long College World Series drought a couple years ago and was on that staff. He's been at East Carolina, his alma mater, for 5 years, taking him to the NCAA tournament 4 times, Super Regionals. He's not going anywhere. He's got a passion for that place, and he's also got a really good setup for that place. Terry Rooney, as I mentioned, he was at Central Florida for a while, 8 years there, went to the tournament a couple of times, won 261 games there. Interesting connection for him. Greg Goff was just named the Purdue head coach yesterday. He was the volunteer assistant.
That's right. They would have crossed paths at Alabama then.
Goff was the head coach for 1 year at Alabama. Rooney was his pitching coach. And Goff now, with that coach going back to Oregon, Wasikowski, Goff is the head coach of Purdue. So there's some connection there with Rooney. And let me just say, you were there with Terry Rooney. I would do cartwheels up and down X Stadium if Terry Rooney ended up leaving Houston, where he's a pitching coach right now, to come back and be head coach here.
Yeah, that'd be – it could happen. He's in an assistant role now. I think he had a good experience at Notre Dame, with Paul and that staff. So that one, I think, as far as it being realistic, I think it is.
Really focused guy, really sharp guy. When you look at the guys, Jeff Samardzija, Jeff Manship, Kyle Weiland, a guy who, unfortunately, by the time he got to the big leagues in the Astros organization, I think was elbow problems, and he's done now. But also David Phelps is a guy he recruited. So you've got 4 guys ended up getting to the major leagues with Terry Rooney as their mentor here at Notre Dame. A really good pitch. And I like that pitching background as well, because I think that's got to be kind of the focal point of whatever the next coach does here at Notre Dame. Okay, we'll continue through this list. We got to take another timeout before we get too far like we did last week. But we'll continue through this list of some former Notre Dame assistants and whether or not they make sense. And I got a couple other names we might throw out there as well. Sean and Sharpley, Leprechaun Lunch, 5-star dive bar downtown Elkhart, 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Winding things down, Sean and Sharpley, Leprechaun Lunch, 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader at 5-star dive bar in downtown Elkhart. So, Evan, we've got just about 3 minutes here before we've got to wrap things up. We're going through the list of former Notre Dame assistants. Obviously, the guys that we like best. Your dream scenario might be Brian O'Connor coming back again. That's not happening. One of his two assistants might be realistic. I don't know that that's happening. Terry Rooney, Cliff Godwin, both what I would call strong, high-level candidates for the job. Godwin's got a great situation. He's not leaving East Carolina. Rooney, again, pitching background, love everything about him, real focused, sharp, detail-oriented, the whole thing. He's the pitching coach currently at Houston under Todd Whiting, who was the top assistant at TCU when they were making their College World Series runs a few years back. David Gruey, he was a part of the staff. He wasn't part of the staff. He was an assistant here under Paul Menier from, 03, 04 maybe. So he recruited you, became the head coach at Michigan State. And then when Cliff Godwin and Terry Rooney left for Central Florida, Paul Menier hired David Gruy to come down and be a part of his staff. And then he wasn't at LSU for very long. No. And he was out of coaching baseball for a while. And the last I heard, he was at Milligan College, a small school in the South. So would not consider Gruy a candidate. Graham Sykes, who is part of the Schrag staff, he's been on the Michigan State staff for the last 9 years. He went from being the volunteer assistant here at
he
Notre
was
Dame.
Awesome.
Yeah, great, great guy, former catcher. Love everything about him. He's really sharp as well. Just some quick thoughts on him.
He's, I mean, he'd be a great fit. He loves Notre Dame, I think would do a really good job. I think for me, the three that make the most sense in the climate where we're saying this, you know, you're probably not going to get a guy that, a long-term guy like Godwin or an O'Connor. So you look at what's realistic and someone who will build, come and build this program back up to where it is. I think Graham is a guy. I think Terry Rooney's a guy. And I think Eddie Smith is a guy.
Yeah, I completely agree with all three of those. Three really good candidates. And what I would say is I know that there's always that sort of pull to go out and find an established head coach. I think with
you're going to have to pay up then.
That's right. You're going to have to pay a lot. And with a lot of the things that we talked about that need done, I think it's going to be hard. But I would also say that there are a lot of good – Brian O'Connor was an assistant before he went to Virginia. Dan McDonald at Louisville, an assistant. Kevin O'Sullivan.
Right,
you can go down the line. There are a lot of guys who have won both national championships and been to the College World Series at their current jobs right now. Texas Tech is another one, who were assistants before they got those first jobs.
Someone young, energetic, can recruit, is not afraid of technology. They can complete really a shift in ideology and development, I think, is really important.
Completely agree. Evan Sharpley, Sean Stiers for Garrett Kazer. We will talk to you next week. WSBT South Bend.